You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I've got too much to do. Too much to prove. There's a child in me who wanted to be the star of the school. She left me a clue I'd be a fool not to use.
This is Laura Jean with Too Much To Do. This is taken from her forthcoming album Amateurs, which is going to be her sixth studio album, coming out on the 4th of November. And we're very lucky. She's going to be heading over to Aotearoa to play at the Others Way Festival on the 22nd of this month. You can get your tickets from Flying Out or from Under the Radar. It's going to be a really amazing night of artists all across Karangahape Road. Heaps of local amazing artists and a few special overseas friends like Laura. I was very happy to have a chat with Laura about this album, which is coming out soon, and talk a wee bit about how she mines her own personal history, her family history, and uses a bit of, sleight of hand or characterization to play with the idea of those things. I started by asking her about the title of this album, Amateurs. So let's hear what she's got to say about that.
Amateurs evolved. The idea of amateurs was, I mean, on the face of it, it's a very simple self-portrait of a female artist, you know, approaching 40. Now I am 40, in Australia specifically. But then that's the umbrella, but it's looking at different aspects of what that means in as a lived experience. And one of the things in Australia about being an artist that is kind of more focused on your practice and than commercial concerns is that, you know, you can kind of feel like an eternal amateur in your kind of standing in society, because in Australian society, especially after the Scott Morrison administration, I suppose you'd call it, there's this very strong anti-intellectual, anti-artist sentiment in Australia that really grew over the last 10 years. Like, for example, when the government would announce something to do with film funding, the emphasis on the announcement was about all the tradies that would get work from it, the lawyers, and it's like, it's almost embarrassing to Australians to be an artist, you know, like it's like we're being indulgent and silly and childlike. And
yeah.
So some of the experiences I have, like one of the songs on the album is about playing at a folk festival, and just about realizing that most of the audience wouldn't really know if this is my first gig or my 100th gig. And, you know, it's there's no kind of recognition for mid-career artists. So, yeah, that's kind of the vibe of it.
I think that rings very sort of familiar, I'm sure, to a lot of New Zealand artists as well. I think this whole sort of Australasian or Southern Hemisphere tall poppy syndrome thing, it's we sort of joke about it, but it is really real. And I think maybe the pandemic has really thrown it into relief as well, because you see how little perhaps there is for those communities when the ways that you support yourself, you know, tooth and nail every day, are actually made impossible by not being able to gather, not being able to have the sort of normal collective experience of music that at least gets you by. When that's all removed, where's the support for makers? I feel like that's been a really big conversation, at least within those communities. I'm hopeful that perhaps outside of those communities people are starting to see that, but I think your album rings very true for a lot of people. How did you approach pulling that apart? Because that's a big thing to grapple with for yourself as a person. How did you approach putting that into words and into song?
I just start with the micro. So I just start with what I, you know, being observant and noticing things. So, and then the things that I notice start to weevil into me and get my critical thinking going and my feelings going. So it's really about looking at these tiny experiences that happen. So playing at a folk festival, another song is called The Market on the Sand, and it's about a little kind of community market in on the Central Coast where I grew up. And it's kind of about, I went to this little market thinking it was going to be like a cute like community thing, but it ended up being one of those markets where like everything's graphically designed and everything's like really expensive. And it started me, so those little situations will get into me because I'm a very passionate person, and I'll start going, why did that person trick me into buying $10 strawberry jam by putting that gingham cloth on it, like triggering my nostalgic sense of community exchange, like those kind of things really affect me. I'm passionate about things like this, and so when I see it being manipulated or commodified, I get so hurt. And so I just come from noticing these little situations that my writerly brain recognizes as a very neat metaphor for things that are bigger, so for a situation that's bigger. And I just use, that's how I enter into these bigger themes. It's just through the tiny, tiny things that I notice. Yeah.
I want to ask you about writing about your personal history and your family history and experiences of members of your family as well as yourself. How does it feel to approach that? Do you talk to your family before you put songs out that have them in it? Or is that something that you sort of just kind of seek forgiveness, not permission? What's the process for that type of writing?
Well, what I do with my memories and things is, it's some of the things I write about didn't happen. Because I sing in the first person, a lot of people think that everything I write about actually happened, but it's not true. I make things up sometimes, and I use kind of kaleidoscopic splinters of memories of things that I have, and then I apply them to a different kind of context to kind of give a realistic texture to this idea I'm trying to express. I cherry pick little tiny things about my life, but I actually make them into something else. And I always show my songs to my family to gauge their reaction. Mm-hmm. And then if they think it's cool, then I'll go forward. But I absolutely would not publish anything without their 100% approval. 17.
Teenager Again is a really beautiful song and a really incredible entry point to the world you've kind of made around amateurs. What was the process of writing this track like? Because I'm interested hearing that you've invented some memories and taken some real ones.
Everything in that one's true.
True, okay. Well, tell us
pretty
a bit
much.
More.
So I wrote Teenager Again years ago, probably more than a decade ago.
Oh, wow.
But I wrote the boat, like, you know, the bulk of it, but I never nailed the hooks, I never nailed the structure. I just had all these stories that were all threaded together, and it wasn't quite right for a long time. And then I kind of figured out that there was like a thread throughout the song, just a simple kind of hook about somebody or anybody or touch somebody or somebody else. So that became my little chorus, because I need like a little through line in songs. And then it's really just a little portrait of a teenage girl trying to kind of heal themselves through these very uncertain ways with their kind of similarly traumatized mother, single mother, trying to help, you know, help them survive, basically. And so I did go to a psychic, and that psychic did tell me I was an Aztec in a past life and that, you know, and in that, obviously it was the Central Coast of New South Wales in the 90s, so of course she said I was sacrificed, which is an absolute offensive cliche about Aztec culture, but that's what she said to me in those days. And she said that's why I was depressed, is because I was snatched away from my mother in a past life. And then I did Reiki, and I really did sit in a circle and sang Reach Out and Touch Somebody by Noiseworks. So sometimes my childhood and my teenage years were just so spectacularly hilarious and troubled and beautiful that it's very easy for me to just pick some hilarious details, you know.
Artist's goldmine.
It's an absolute goldmine, yeah.
You've got some excellent New Zealand friends who've joined you on backing vocals, Aldous Harding and Marlon Williams. They pop up on a couple of tracks. How long back does your friendship with them go?
They were living on top of the pub where my boyfriend worked when they first moved to Melbourne, at the Yarra Hotel in Melbourne. They'd moved over together to play music in Australia for a little while, and I met Hannah and Marlon probably in 2013 or 14 when they first moved over. And then they were at a party and they heard my fourth album and they both loved it. And then I put Hannah in contact with John Parrish, who I'd recorded that album with, and then she ended up working with him for all her albums since the first one. So I don't know. We toured together as well in 2015 around New Zealand, and touring makes you very close. And I toured with Hannah in 2014 or 15. She was supporting me on my album tour before she was famous.
It's a very lovely sound that all your voices make together, and I think, you know, having voices that work together is a lucky coincidence in some ways, but also I think having a long-standing friendship and close musical connection makes that work so well too.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I didn't choose them because of their profile at all. I really chose them for their tone of voice because I needed that kind of confident, because they're both very, very good singers technically.
Yeah.
So I needed that really good technical kind of confidence in those parts to make them work. And I needed their pathos, you know, that they have when they sing.
Absolutely.
They've got this certain tone that has a sense of humour that I needed in the album. So we had a little time just in January. I came over to Christchurch just before the pandemic, January 2020, and we had a couple of days together just working through my songs, and also we did a bit of listening to Marlon's songs and Hannah's songs, and we're all kind of in the writing process of our albums, and that was a beautiful, beautiful couple of days that really helped me move forward with some of the ideas, yeah.
To bring it back to, I guess, the idea of this album, Amateurs, this feels like the antithesis to that awful, you know, indifference, perhaps, of the broader public to artists who are just out there really hustling. Having those intense community connections feels like the antidote to that, maybe, or something. Would you agree with that? Or the thing that helps you? Yeah.
Because, you know what, I've never really sincerely wanted to make a living from music. Like, I know that sounds strange, but it's not really what I what I personally do it for. So I am an amateur, like I truly am, like, because the actual meaning of the word amateur is someone that does something for love.
Hmm.
And that's part of the reason why I called it amateurs too, was I wanted to remind people that, you know, this scourge we put on this idea of doing something for love as though that's silly, and we call it amateurish. And it's like, well, that's actually a term of that's something you should be proud of.
Hmm.
Because there's just such an obsession with money and commodifying your hobbies and all those kind of things in our society. You know, you got to make money off all your side hustles. And I'm just like, I understand why it is. It's because our cost of living's gone up, and I totally get it, and I don't look down on it. But I just think it's good for us to every now and again think, well, am I allowed to just do something for joy?
Yeah.
Do I have to be popular? Do I have to be liked? Do I have to be commercializing it? You know, like, just to ask ourselves that question, can I survive on my day job and just do this for love, you know? And what comes up for us when we realize that the way that we judge our success in something is often through these highly corporate, commercialized values.
Laura, thank you so much for speaking with me. I'm really excited to hear the album in full when it comes out, and I can't wait to see you at the Others Way Festival. That'll be really excellent. Second round for the Others Way, is that right?
Yes, it's like the best festival I've ever played at. I'm not a big traveller, so, and I hate flying, but I will do it for the Others Way because I just think it's the most beautiful, one of the purest kind of community festivals I've ever played at. So I'm really excited. Oh, thanks for having me over there. Yeah.
Can't wait to see you. Thank you so much for chatting with me. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. That was Laura Jean speaking with me about her new album Amateurs, which is coming out at the start of November. But you can get a little preview of it if you are heading along to the Others Way Festival. And if you've been umming and ahhing, go get yourself a ticket this morning. Treat yourself. It's going to be a very lovely celebration of all things community and music. 22nd of October, all across Karangahape Road. Flying Out's the place to get tickets. Or you can head to Under the Radar. Laura's got a brand new single out this morning, so we're going to have a listen to that now. This is the third single from Amateurs. It's called A Funny Thing Happened.
Spell the light on the hill.
brand new from Laura Jean, A Funny Thing Happened, third single from Amateurs, and she's going to be playing at the Others Way Festival. I'm really looking forward to it. Thanks again to Laura for speaking with me. I really enjoyed hearing her thoughts about managing her practice as an artist and all the weird expectations or perhaps indifference put on it by the broader public. So if you'd like to see her perform, it's going to be very special.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.